This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hello and welcome to the Professional Insight Podcast, Season 6, Episode No Idea. My name's Brandon Curry. Thank you all for tuning in.
I'm Jeff Collins.
I'm Josh Bond, and I'm not thankful for you tuning in.
Trevor Lindy.
I am.
Yes, I am. I'm teasing. Especially after last night.
What happened last night?
Yeah, what's the big thing last night there? There, bud.
Nothing good.
Oh, should we roll?
Nothing good.
Should we roll it? I think we should roll it.
Yeah, let's just go to it.
Let's go to the clips.
What are we doing? Like Don Cherry's Rock'em Sock'em?
Yeah.
Standing his ground. There's the hold by Brody.
Oh God.
And there's a run by.
Oof. And here we go.
Oof.
Look at that.
Unreal. Oh my God. Look at. Like, he's just standing there. Like, they can't let that happen.
How is that not charging?
They can't let that happen. Look at that.
That's the definition of charging, except for the Habs fan who's going to say, oh, that's playoff hockey. You don't know what playoff hockey is, first and foremost. You haven't been there in a while, so, and you're not going to be there for a while.
It's playoff
hockey. Charging. That's the definition of charging. He targeted him from the blue line, whistle goes, crushes him. And there was no response by the Leafs, which made me kind of sick. But that's – and out of all that, Leafs got a penalty. Leafs got a two-minute penalty off of that.
Yeah, how did they get the penalty? What was the penalty?
Roughing because of number 78 right there.
Oh, Jesus.
Watch, number 78. Cross-checked in the arm. Smoke charged. Let's give Florida a two-minute penalty.
See, this is the problem with Leafs fans. Probably. Leafs fans call penalties on everybody
else. Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't do that.
If you back that thing up just right there, that shows you that he literally left from just inside the blue line and his feet didn't stop moving. There, keep going. See, his feet didn't stop moving.
And the second Kampf picks up the puck, the play's dead, and he knows it.
Gliding.
Play's dead.
I didn't see blind man stride.
Yeah. But you know what? Habs fans don't care because they're blind.
Habs fans,
as we all know, and Trevor's the definition of it, care more about what the Leafs do, what their own team does.
I'm telling you.
And had
the Leafs done that to a Panthers player,
he'd be suspended for three games.
Had a Leafs player done that to a Florida player, you guys would have been hooting and hollering, especially you, Collins.
I wouldn't halt because there would have been a five-minute penalty, and I would say, what the hell?
Bunting got suspended last game.
Here's the end of the game.
Yeah.
Look at the ref.
Mitch wants the fight right there. Put it back. Mitch wants the fight. He's saying, come on, Tkachuk. Let's mix it up. Let's drop the mitts.
No, he's saying, I'm scared to death. I don't like the
exactly.
fight.
Exactly.
Why the hell is this guy doing it to me? Ref, can you let him punch me in the face three times, and I'll smile because I don't know what to do? That's what he's doing right there. Mitch is a pussy. He doesn't want to fight. Let's not.
100%.
But there's a lot of NHL players like that.
Yes.
The funny part is they're teammates. They're teammates in the London Knights for 2 years. And all Florida knows what to do right now. And I'm telling you right now, game five, they're going to be the dirtiest team possible to scare the shit out of Toronto to see if they can get away with making them, you know, curl away. And I know I'm a Leafs fan, blah, 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 whatever.
This is a professional analysis.
Yeah, the professional analysis is you see those eyebrows on Lindy right now? Because he didn't have the balls to bet me that they would win round one. Because I think you said, oh, yeah, they're not going to get a round one, blah, 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 blah. And I said, put your money where your mouth is or your hair.
Like you shut up. Like you cut
Shut up. Shut up like a little bitch. And I won and whatever. And I'm not betting nothing round two because I don't think they're getting past round two. But whatever, we'll see. I think someone wrote it the best for me. It was this. Here's the thing. 3-1 makes it respectable, which they did last night. 3-2 makes it a series, which I think we have a good chance to do because I think Florida just goons it up, gets all kinds of penalties and all that, tries to scare the shit out of Toronto, but they're going to get in the power play. 3-3 makes the fan base believe again. And 4-3, baby, makes you legends.
100%.
Boom! 1 of 4 teams have done it in the NHL, and one of those teams was Toronto.
Four. Okay, let's give our listeners some context to that stat. Go ahead, Jeff.
What's that?
Four teams
out of 100 or 201 teams in the history of the NHL who are down 3-0 have come back to win. Only four teams. Most recently, 2014 with the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yep.
And one of those teams, 1942, and this is kind of this, you know, talks to Habs fans because they live in the past more than anyone.
Leafs did it in the past.
So if you can live in the past like Habs fans, why can't the Leafs do it again? Right, Lindy?
All the Leafs fans are doing is living in the past.
No. I'll tell you right now what the Leafs would do because this is being a Leafs fan.
History repeats itself. Don't kid yourself.
Make fun of me. All you want is a Leafs fan. Whatever. Leafs fans have thicker skin than any other people out there. Leafs are going to tie it up to 3-3, and then they'll lose like in overtime of game 7 just to break our hearts. The best way they possibly can. That's what I'm That's what it feels like. And, Curry, I told you, I said, they'll win Series 1. I was confident as hell they'd win Series 1. And I said, Series 2, they'll go to Boston and lose in the 7th game and, you know, make us feel like we have a chance and then break our hearts. But no, they did it even worse. They ended up playing Florida, the team who made the playoffs by 1 point, beating up the Buffalo Sabres. And we're going to lose to them in the second round.
But now I'm going
to lose to them on Friday.
I'm going to add to that, though, and I'm going to say that
anything the Leafs against the Habs, whatever, anything against the Leafs, Habs fans.
The majority of Leaf fans, if they win the next game, are going to say it was a great season.
Yeah, fair.
No, it was a terrible season.
I know, but you're not the majority. But I said the majority of
After game 3, I think the majority of Leaf fans were fire Keith, fire Dubas, fire trade all the players and all that.
Yeah.
Going to rebuild, make Matthew Nyes the captain, Joseph Woll the next starting quarter, you know, do whatever you can.
Now, what if Panthers go on to win the cup?
I don't give a shit.
What if they go on to win the cup? What if they go on to win the cup and the Leafs won 2 games
against either your first or last, baby. That's all I care about. Talladega Nights.
Try or try not.
I'm a big Dubas fan.
Do or do not.
Johnny Icola has got me on the old I don't like Keefe bandwagon right now.
There, someone got it.
So we'll see.
He
keeps putting in Hall. I don't understand what the stats that Hall has. And
you're right, Curry. Hall was one of the problems last night again.
Last night, and he got the penalty that put them down 5-4.
The craziest thing
is, He never should have seen a playoff game.
Remember when we got Shen and they were talking about Shen being a 7th defenseman and probably not make the top 6, he's there for backup?
Shen was a beast last night.
He's the most crucial defenseman they have in the whole team right now. Totally most agree. Crucial defenseman. He's better than any player in the Montreal Canadiens right now by himself.
He's probably better than half the team.
Oh, yeah. He's the only one who's got heart out there right now. Why wasn't he on the ice in the last minute of the game there too? Because he's someone who can beat up anybody on the other team.
Yeah.
But Simmons has got to go in. And I don't see.
He has to.
All Keith is saying is don't muck it up. Don't do what they're doing. And Florida's like saying, well, these pussies won't even swing at us. There's nobody. Yes. There will. Like a Chario fight, McCabe will fight. But Florida's as dirty as it gets.
Yep.
And the league don't care because it's playoff hockey. Punch him in the face ten times, whatever.
Saw a nurse skate in there for a quick one there. That wasn't an easy tilt. He did well.
You know what? If they don't suspend Pietrangelo for last night, two-handed Draisaitl, the hottest player in the whole NHL right now, who's going to break a record? Look at that. Right on the wrist. What's he trying to do there? He's trying to break his wrist, take him out of the series.
Yep. That's what he's doing.
Because he's the hottest player in the NHL right now.
No other intent. What are you doing here? Whack. Unless you're chopping a log on the wrist.
And you know what? Habs fans ain't saying nothing about only Leafs fans care about that.
Look at this. The best player, active player in the world, steps in and defends his teammate.
Yep.
When some shit like that goes down, right? And what's Toronto doing? The guy with that big ass beard. What's his name there?
Gudas.
Gudas is sitting there. What?
And he won't drop it. You know what? There's a game they played Toronto where Zach Aston-Reese went after Gudas, tried to drop the gloves, and that guy will not drop gloves. He does not drop gloves. He's a guy who's just, like, just tries to hit and crush people. That's all he does. And anybody who says that's not a charging on that hit, whatever. It's playoff hockey. I don't care. We go on. Still just shows you bullshit. And Leafs fans are like, whatever. We're not going to get the calls.
Fuck well, if he doesn't drop anyways. The gloves, he can still take a couple of pops in the mouth then. How about that?
Yeah, he should. And you watch. Know? If you try to pop him, he will not fight.
Well, then I'll take 5 minutes. Fucking I'll go.
And Zach Aston-Reese, if he's in, but Aston-Reese isn't making the lineup right now because Keith wants to do this 11 defenseman because he needs to have Justin Hull in there for some reason. Someone's got to give him the puck on the other team, you know? How's Fleury going to get the puck without Justin Hull in the ice?
Now, here's an honest question for you. Honest to God, do you think it's gotten to a point where some of our sporting events are predetermined?
You know, like, definitely, like, listen, some, I mean, boxing was the worst for it back in the 80s and early 90s. I mean, how many pay-per-views we all tuned in, and the next thing you know, it's like, it's over within like one or two rounds, right?
Done.
So, UFC. I mean, yeah, it's
UFC 10 it's seconds known. Main event.
It's,
but no, I'm talking
it's
now
the Tyson days.
Yeah. But I'm talking now more into our sports. Like, look at your biggest franchises, Toronto for hockey, Toronto,
New York Rangers, Chicago,
New York, you know,
Montreal.
What I mean?
No, that's not even a franchise. That's an AHL team.
Montreal. But you know what?
They Original put six.
Mediocrity, right? Like, I mean.
Well, this is the problem with sports. They want to make it, you know, parity. So they got to put in a salary cap, which, you know, it handcuffs teams like Montreal and Toronto and New York and all that. And then you've got teams in Arizona that are playing in a barn with 5,000 people that we're trying to prop up to grow the game.
Why we're all businessmen.
Put a luxury tax on there. Right? Let the expensive teams that are holding, propping up the whole league spend more on their players, and that extra money goes down towards the teams who can't even sell an arena.
We're all businessmen, right?
When Matthews goes to Arizona, they'll fill that stadium.
That's the dream of every Montreal Canadian fan.
What are you talking
about? You'd be
about?
So naked with, like, lube on your body if Matthews left to move to Arizona. He might leave Toronto, and we're not going to disagree with that, but he's not going to Arizona.
Why not? He's born in – well, he's not born there.
Have
he's
you seen
raised
him?
In,
do you know anything about Austin Matthews? I know you do. You're probably naked in the mirror talking about him all the time. You're a Habs fan. But
playboy. He wants the limelight.
There's no limelight in Arizona. There's nothing.
How do you know?
How do you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he would get some because he's a home boy.
Here you go. Here you go,
boy.
Trevor. Name three players in Arizona.
I don't care.
You can't because there's no limelight there. They can't sell out 5,000 – foot, you know, 5,000 person stadium.
Now, if you're a businessman,
if you go somewhere,
a business person, and you want to grow your franchises in these different parts, you do things like that. Like, you take your Gretzky's and you plop them in Los Angeles.
Well,
right?
See, the big problem here is Gary Bettman. He's raising the values of the franchises, right? And look what he's about to do. Ottawa
so what's
Senators
it doing
are about
to
sell for $1 billion.
Game, right?
$1 billion. So the general managers or the owners don't give a crap about that. They care about franchise value, right? That's all they care about. Ottawa Senators go for $1 billion. What would Toronto or Montreal go for? Double. That's
crazy.
Double money. Now. You know? And that's all the owners care about is franchise value.
Easy.
I don't think so. Well, those teams aren't being sold anytime soon.
Yeah. Ottawa? Well, I know, but Toronto, you never know. It's all corporations.
Oh, yeah.
These days, right? So, but that's the problem. Like, Ottawa goes for $1 billion, and you got what? Snoop Dogg lining up in the weekend and Ryan Reynolds.
Snoop Dogg's combining. Hot for it, man.
They're all attaching
no.
their name to it.
Get me some of
they're combining
franchise.
Now.
The three of them are combining?
The three of them are combining their bids now.
I thought it was three different.
They'll get it. And then again, that's the entertainment value, right?
That's the new trend that's going to happen in the hockey franchises. You're going to see all these little crappy teams get sold to people who attach their name to it. And those guys probably put no skin in the game. They just, hey, I'll attach my name. I want 5%, 3% ownership or something like that, right?
So that endorsement. How far does that business line push?
What do you mean?
How much do you control the result in order to control the bottom line?
Well, if they're going to control the result, you don't want to have Florida-Carolina finals in the Eastern Conference. There's no value in that at all, right?
Ooh. Right.
Now, Florida-Carolina, like Florida couldn't even sell out because they said no Leaf fans here. So they weren't even a sold-out barn in the playoffs, right? And they got an exciting playoff-caliber team because they get away with Gunnin.
They do. They do.
You know, and then you look at the Western Conference, like you lost.
But like, Tampa's good. Tampa usually has a pretty strong following, right?
Yeah, but if you've got your strongest following, you'll have like Toronto or Montreal or
no.
Rangers in the final, right? Or
but just think
Vegas.
Of the pyramid. Just think
Vegas
of the pyramid.
Would be a big draw. Boston would be a big draw, right? Chicago.
Look at Vegas. Detroit. Vegas has got Eichel now.
Like
they're
Chicago,
doing phenomenal.
New York. Chicago, New York would be their probably dream final, right? That would be a dream final for them as far as ratings in the States go. They don't really care if Canada makes it.
Nope. No.
In Canada, the dream final right now would be Toronto-Edmonton, right?
100%.
But yes. That doesn't
I've been
move
dreaming
the needle
about
the
that
States.
For a while.
Doesn't move the needle in the States, right?
Nothing.
No, ESPN but I bet you. Yeah, but no.
The revenue in Canada would go through the roof. Like for them, it's so much smarter to have Toronto get through. And they could easily say, look, let's enforce this series with if you see a penalty, call it. But playoff has a different standard, right? So it is what it is.
I'm not switching to gear here, but I want to get on the record saying that we can't get through this podcast without talking about CNN, okay?
CNN.
Go ahead.
What do you want to talk about CNN for?
Didn't they run Trump last night?
They did.
Yes, they did.
Pretty comical.
Audience is, what was it?
It was a Trump town hall. They had 400 people in the audience that are either Republican or independent-leaning Republican voters. And it
no,
was
this is CNN. That's
CNN, yeah. But keep in mind, though, since Biden was elected, or maybe not even since 2020, I would say probably 2022, they started to kind of move the needle more to the middle. They want to be seen as more the middle, right? Where they're trying to look at both sides.
They should be apartisan, right? Apolitical.
Yep. Yeah, they're trying to be
they're
somewhere in the middle.
Serve,
they're trying to show
report
both.
The news, some good, not take a side, right?
There was some good feedback. So to Trevor's point, CNN, you know, definitely 2016 to 2020, they were seen definitely as a left-leaning network. They still are center left-leaning network, but then they took strides like Don Lemon, they got canned him. Cuomo, they canned him. So they
Cuomo was a different reason though, but.
Oh, sure.
Why did they can these cats? Why did they can them? I used to watch these guys, but
Cuomo
I don't
had them. Cuomo had some journalistic integrity problems because his brother was the governor of New York State. New York. So that was pretty self-explanatory. Don Lemon was just this bleeding heart leftist that like just completely and no
he'd
one
almost cry all
that.
The time, eh? Lemon
he made like he could not have when you're sitting there, he had a primetime slot and then he got relegated to the morning show, which had bad ratings. And there's many clips of him completely not being able to be bipartisan when interviewing somebody. Yeah. Like it's one thing to challenge somebody. It's another thing to, you know, implement or import your views. So I'll give you an example. You know, George Strompopoulos the guy on ABC. I can't even pronounce his last name. Yeah.
He faded off, but then came back.
Stephanopoulos.
Right?
Stephanopoulos.
He faded away, but then came back.
George Strompopoulos was Much Music, CBC. Not that guy.
In Canada.
Stephanopoulos, ABC.
Stephanopoulos is ABC.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
If you watch him, for example, and which I did on election night, he's very measured. He's down the center. Does he lean left? I couldn't tell you. You know, like your... you know, what's the Peter Mansbridge is another one. Rex Murphy, when he was on CBC, is another one, right? Mike Wallace, Christopher Wallace, who was on Fox News. He was a phenomenal interviewer.
Chris Wallace, you know, excellent for debates as well as a moderator.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Right.
Mansbridge has been phenomenal.
Phenomenal. these are your old school journalists, the people who kept it down the center. You would never ever know what side of the political spectrum they were on.
And you knew they had one. You knew they had one.
Right. But the way they asked questions and the way they either, like, a great example, like Chris Wallace, you watch like him while he's moderating a debate, and it was like he didn't let either side get away with bullshit.
No,
it's like, let's ring it back, like rein it back in. Here we go.
During the Trump debates, it'd be just like Trump and Biden. He's like, Mr. Trump, that's not what I asked. Answer the question. Yeah. And he's on Fox
Keep
News
pulling them back
right
in.
At the time.
Well, there you go.
So that was great. I'm not against CNN having Trump on. He is by far. So basically, they're going to have President Biden on, or they already have had him on. And he is the sitting president. He is Democrat. And if he decides to go through with his promise to run again, he will be the Democratic nominee. And so if you're going to do that, look at Trump right now. Trump is 56% approval rating in decided Republican voters, meaning he currently right now, if the primaries are run today, Trump is your candidate. And DeSantis, who hasn't declared yet, is like 30 points behind. Like, it's not even funny. So technically speaking, Nikki Haley's the only other one that's declared right now. Oh, no, there's Vivtech, I believe his name is. He's declared as well. But I don't think he's filed any paperwork yet. But Nikki Haley has filed paperwork. So you've got somebody who's going to be right now, statistically, he's the Republican nominee, whether you like it or not. And you're going to have another Biden Trump showdown.
Even if he's behind bars.
All I say is when it comes to that sort of stuff and you want to be down the center and you want to be balanced, make sure you have Nikki Haley on, make sure you have, DeSantis when he declares on, make sure you have all the Republican nominees on, because CNN is a primetime network, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I cannot believe that Trump is going to be running for the presidency again. I cannot. I called it.
You're honestly asking why a narcissist is running for president?
No,
I can't believe the party would fan that fire, man.
Yep.
Good ratings.
It's a business. Yeah. Every fucking thing is a business, right? Excuse my language. Every freaking thing is a business.
I still can't believe he got voted in and then voted in again. And now he's going to run again. What happens if he's in jail? If he gets incarcerated?
Well,
it'll freeze. They'll freeze the proceedings probably during his run.
Hold on. Didn't
No, I don't know.
The lion in the Constitution. Not the lion thing. What the? Joe. What's the guy's name?
Oh,
pandemic.
Santos?
Yes. Beginning of the pandemic. Lion King. Tiger King.
Tiger King.
Okay, Tiger King, yeah.
Joe Exotic.
Joe Mullet, I was going to call
apparently
him.
Apparently running for president.
Joe,
as an independent.
Well, here's the thing. There's nothing
be a good
in
vice
the Constitution
for Trump.
That says that a there's nothing in the Constitution that says that a someone with a criminal record cannot run for president. It only specifically states that you cannot be foreign born. You have to be born in the United States. So like,
can I bring something up? What you're saying, Curry, is correct, but here's the best part. There's nothing that says you can't run, but their rules say you can't vote.
So depending on the state, because voting is on the state. So this is the irony of the situation. Trump just got convicted in a civil lawsuit, which doesn't make him a criminal. It just makes him owe $5 million to the lady, right? To his victim. But if he gets convicted on one of those 34 charges, that's
only
34
charges, though. It's only 34. In,
34 well, felony charges.
Convicted, if he gets
what about
convicted,
Stormy Daniels?
He could get off with just a bond, right? Mm-hmm. Like just to pay in the bond and just not get put in jail. He can still run for president, but he cannot vote for himself in the state that he resides, which is Florida. because he's a convicted felon, and that says unless they change the rules, which DeSantis would not change the rules for him.
I think we need The Rock to go against him.
Oprah.
That'd be kind of cool.
Oprah wouldn't go on that side of the fence, though. But somebody like that, right?
Right.
Bring Barack back.
I couldn't get over. So the clips that I've seen of the town hall, Caitlin Collins was the moderator of the...
Sounds like a good person.
She was the moderator of the show, her and her tiny lips.
Hey!
Why do you get it? There's a lot of people with small lips out there. You just offended all of them.
Yeah, you can ask Annalisa. I had to throw she's it out there. Like
anyone with small lips out there, we apologize.
Yeah.
Trevor Lindy does not represent all our opinions here. He obviously is anti small lips.
Look, I got a no upper lip. Screw you. Okay. Nothing.
Anyway,
continue.
He had the nerve. Trump in that interview would like belittle her and say, like, you're such a disgusting person. Like his typical BS. And like, where's the decorum?
Oh, geez. That's
the problem that I have with a lot of it. I have no problem with Trump being because I'm a libertarian when it comes to that kind of stuff. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. As long as they keep it equal for everybody, then I don't really care. But to your point, Trevor,
I think she's got beautiful lips, Trevor.
If she wanted to kiss Trev, you'd be kissing her. Yes or no?
Yeah. Well,
yes or no, Trev? Jesus. Yes, that's what I thought.
So anyways, as I was saying, the decorum is disgusting.
Yeah.
What he's able to get away with and what he says, beautiful. Jesus Christ. What he's able to be said is disgraceful. It's sexist. It's in some cases racist.
Let's grab them by the
it is
well, that
disgusting
came up all over the civil lawsuit.
Yeah.
Big like that that Access Hollywood clip.
Yeah.
And they called him out right in his deposition about it back in November.
Yep.
I
it's crazy.
It is.
Well, what's the next topic?
There is no other word for it than crazy, though, to be honest with
Should
you.
We talk more about lips or are we going to just move past that?
No, we're not. No? We're moving on that.
We can talk about Clint Eastwood being like 92, and I think he's got a 7-year-old kid.
A 70-year-old kid or a 7-year-old?
That's mathematically correct.
And then he also has, I think, a 26-year-old kid.
And that could also be mathematically correct.
And he might have more kids than that, too.
Rules don't apply to Hollywood.
But think of that age range from 26 to 70-year-old. So he was having kids for the span of, what, 40-something years? I'm 47.
Good for him.
All right, so let's
want to do a market update on real estate or what?
Okay, market update on real estate. Go ahead there, Collins.
It's booming.
Let's hear the market.
Done. It's booming. That's it.
Nice.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for that update. Over to weather by Trevor.
Succinct and to the point. No, that's great. Right? It's good to see that it's up.
Yeah, it's busy. I got a listing I put up 3 days ago. We're currently sitting at 4 offers. They got till 5 o'clock right now. And one of the ones I was showing houses to yesterday was a nice place in Thorold that I thought was slightly underpriced. And that's at 5 offers last night. And I don't know where that's going to go. And it's like I'm burning the candle both. This is the reason why it's happening. I'm going to New York on Thursday next week. And it's just going to ramp up nonstop until I go. So I'm going to have to bring my laptop more than likely when I go, which is going to drive my wife nuts. But we get to go see. Anyone seen this? Book of Mormon?
Yes, no. I have. It's hilarious.
I've never heard of it before, but I'm going to go see that. And we're going to see City in Color plays Thursday night in New York next week, too.
Oh, nice. That's nice. Really cool.
And their new album, shout out, St. Catherine Boy. I love the new album. I'm just obsessed with it right now.
Have you been to New York before?
I have. When I came back from Taiwan, I stayed there one night, didn't sleep for 48 hours, drove back to Welland.
Okay, so enjoy it this time. Like,
yeah, I didn't enjoy it at all last time. I couldn't walk
either.
It's
insane. I've only been once, and it's one of those times where, like, as an adult, I was in awe, right? I was like a little kid, right?
Well, me and the wife were just going totally as tourists and fans and trying to enjoy it. And she, you know, we picked between Vegas and New York. And we just thought the time of year is perfect for New York. And so she's like, City in Color's playing. She tried to surprise me. I found out I absolutely want to go see that. And then we're asking everybody what to do, and the Book of Mormon came up. I was like, I love South Park.
Central Park. Central
Park. Well, yeah, we'll hit, and then we're meeting a couple, like one of my best friends is coming up from Philadelphia, his wife on Saturday night, and we're going to Central Park, whatever. I'm going to try to get mugged. I want to get mugged. I think that's part of the experience. So.
Strawberry Fields.
I'm going to mouth off people at 3 a.m. on Saturday and see what happens. And then, you know,
okay, we want to do the ferry ride. Shot, please. Carry your wallet that's about that thick. Everybody will know you can be mugged.
I'm going to get all my cards there. I'm going to wear like Mr. T jewelry, I think. Perfect. I'm going to get four rings on each finger. I'm going to see. I'm gonna attempt the stereotypes and see. Everyone told me it's super safe there and feel great about it.
Yeah.
So cool. I think if I miss their tee up with my jewelry, I want to see if people will mug me.
People might start throwing money at you.
And believe me, if you wanted to mug me with a gun, I'd be like, here, take whatever you want. Here you go. You want me to go to the ATM machine? Wouldn't be a problem. I'm not getting shot over it.
So
I think you're one of those entertainers.
What are we going to, okay, so honestly, so let's move on with it. So the real estate market is definitely booming. It's coming back. You're happy with it.
Well, it's interesting because I wouldn't say it's booming as far as everything selling as soon as it lists, but it's booming because buyers and sellers are both active busy right now. It's balanced, right? And I work best in a balanced market. Both sides are active right now.
How about the for example, the nationally, what are you seeing?
I don't know. I'm paying attention to the Niagara region. I don't have enough time to like do anything right now. So it's just like, I wake up, I do
paperwork
for 4 or 5 hours. I show some houses. I have to deal with offers. I'm like 9 to 11 every day right now. What about the price points, Jeff? The price index in Niagara has gone up 2 months in a row. So that's an indication that we're on the rise. What they're telling you in Niagara right now, you better buy before summer because it's going to start to go up.
Yep.
So it's like, get going.
I agree with that.
And I think you can tell people are feeling it. So they're out there. The listings are starting to pick up. The buyers are pulling triggers again, which is the biggest change because they haven't. And it's all because the interest rate has stayed flat because it's not going up anymore, which once again, Bank of Canada is always saying, we could go up. You know, we don't know what we're going to do, blah, blah, blah. I think we all have the consensus. They're pretty much staying flat probably for the rest of the year.
They keep saying they're on a stay and hold.
Yeah. So
what's the inflation numbers in that place been at? Do we have an update on that?
So it just went, so inflation was down actually in the most recent, where did I read that? A couple days ago. So inflation was down. Preliminary results from April say that inflation is down again too. I mean, just think about it. It's just more expensive to do anything now. Like you're double thinking everything on what you're doing, where you're going, how you're spending your money. You know, people are investing differently also. So they're trying to hedge against the high inflation and they're starting to pay down debt, which is always a good sign.
So I was laughing about this with my wife the other day. Like my son's he's interested in a girl, whatever, back and forth, right? I'm like, what do young kids do? Grade 8, grade 9. They might go to the movies for a date, maybe fast food.
The mall.
So,
maybe.
So say a boy, you know, I still say pay for the girl. You know, I've tried to be. You know,
they don't like that now, though.
But we'll find. I'm sure there's still girls out there who like to be paid for.
There's princesses.
But say my son takes a girl to Harvey's and then the movies that night. That's a $75 price tag for a kid to go on a date nowadays. It's unreal. Like it's crazy. Like Harvey's combo now, $16, $17, right?
And you don't want to pull out a coupon. You don't want to pull out a coupon on the date.
Right. Look. Take it out of a big Costanza wallet and say, there's got to be a Harvey coupon in here. Oh, shit. It expired.
Just in April.
Mom, Dad, can you drive me to Costco? I got to get a 2-pack for the movie so I can save a little bit of money. Oh, my God. It's going to be so hard to date now. I got to my kid wants to go to the mall to hang out with his buddies for the day. I got to give him $40 just to hang out for the day. I'm like, oh, my God. You're cutting the grass, boy. I got 1.2 acres to cut. Get out there.
And you're allowed to go to the mall once a week.
Exactly.
Well, let me just share my screen here on that one. So here you guys go. Here it is right here in CBC News. So in March, the official numbers are in.
Can you blow that up? Inflation was at
4.3%.
But right.
Okay, now what's that down?
It's sticky. Down. It's sticky. It's sticky. You know, inflation's
now,
sticky. We can't
food
get down.
Prices are still have increased 9.7% at an annual pace in the year of March, though. That's still the scary part. So the decelerated to 4.3, down from 5.2 the previous month. But that, you know, we got to look at it holistically. But when you break it out, a lot of that's driven, a lot of the decline is driven by gasoline prices, right? Mm-hmm. That's why the big decline that's happening,
especially diesel. Diesel's way down.
Food prices are a big deal.
Yeah. Didn't Weston? So, isn't there a change at Weston there too?
Yeah, he stepped down. Yeah, okay. He's still very much involved.
Okay, I knew he had switched gear. I think we may have talked about her.
Go back to that girl. See how big her lips are, and see if Lindy thinks they're appropriate. Christ.
What about our employment metrics? What about our unemployment metrics?
That's the problem. Unemployment
is still very low.
Right? That's why it's sticky.
Yeah,
They can't drop interest rates. Too many people have jobs.
So the majority of
how do you get out of this?
The majority of the job creation that happened last month was part time, not full time work.
Oh, because right? summer jobs and all that, right?
And the fact that just everything in general, and the majority of the jobs are being filled by immigration.
Yeah, so fruit picking.
So.
How about this is just the market that we've got to acclimate ourselves
to? Here's my personal thought on it. First of all, Canada's immigration has to stay at the 350,000 people and higher because we're not having any kids. And at the end of the day, if we're not having any kids, we can't keep filling the bottom of the pyramid to keep our social system that we all love, you know.
And Europe's running out of land.
That's right. So we're with a proper hierarchy. So there's that piece. The other piece, though, is I truly think an unemployment rate is just not going to be as a reliable statistic in the future as an indicator for a recession or a growth rate. And here's why. Our baby boomers, right, was the largest generation. Mm-hmm. And so they used, it was unemployment rate was a, how can I put this?
Construct.
It was a reliable statistic because they all wanted to work. For the vast majority, they all wanted to work. But now as the generations have gone on, which Gen X, millennials, and then Gen Z, which is the next largest generation we have,
Is that what it is? Gen Z? Gen Z's the next largest to the boomers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because boomers had less kids than themselves in millennials.
Yep.
But then your Gen X, which was smaller than your boomers, then had more kids, tended to have at least equal kids than themselves. So one of the reasons why I want to get Peter Zion on here. Because he's a geopoliticist and he kind of follows all this stuff. So when you have a generation that just either casually works, only works when they want to, or when they have to, an unemployment rate is just not that reliable, because you can elect yourself, as long as you say you're not currently looking for work, you're not considered unemployed.
I remember you said that before too, because it's
the methodology, the
stats, right?
Yeah, because if you say you're not looking for work, if they say I'm not looking for work, I'm on mat leave, or I'm not looking for work, I'm on leave, or I'm traveling, or whatever, you're not technically unemployed. Whereas if you go back 100 years, so for example, after World War I, the U.S. technically, a little bit of coincidence, when you compare the Afghan War and what's going on, right? What happened after World War I. And then you had a pandemic, and then you had a little recession in the 1920s, but then you had a massive boom in the 20s. And I just hope we don't end it with a depression. But that being said, there was a recession, and in 1923, I believe, was the year. That was one of the lowest unemployment rates, but they never had, they either said, either you can work and are you employed, yes or no? And so pretty much everyone's gainfully employed. They had like a 1 or 2% unemployment rate in the U.S. at that stage. So it was at technically full employment. Now that's not going to happen. But also on top of that, you'll always have these job openings until we have the ability to redesign our economy to suit with less people. So if your boomers are all retiring, right? what corporations need is a couple years to consolidate and redefine jobs. And then once that happens, you're not going to have multiple jobs for different things. You're going to have one person doing multiple jobs. So technically speaking, your unemployment rate will be more accurate, but that won't, that'll take a couple years for that to filter through. So I just don't see seeing an unemployment rate at 3% to be that accurate. It just doesn't make any sense, because there's a lot of able-bodied people that are choosing not to work. And I think it's keeping it artificially low. They're just selecting themselves out of the labor market.
I like that explanation, because that's the only plausible explanation that has ever made sense, given the fact that both of these, we'll call them indices or whatever, are both on a downward trajectory, but yet we're not seeing the full effect of it, right?
Yep, totally. So where are you seeing the legal landscape there, Bondo? Anything crazy?
The legal landscape, it kind of took off, a few years ago, and it doesn't seem to be turning back. People are getting crazier. People are getting a little bit, less tolerant with one another, right? And it's, we all got to try and do a little bit better in that respect, myself included, but it's, nasty things happen, small little nasty things that shouldn't necessarily happen to one another. But no, the volume's good. We've maintained good volume through.
And I think the pandemic created a lot of separations with people. So there's a lot of real estate that's occurred because of separation and, someone selling off their spousal house and all that. And then they both buy a new house. Like, this is the busiest I've ever been with separations, and it's the most uncomfortable.
But listen, people that are separating,
people
that are separating, I mean, if I can lend any advice to that realm, if you've made the decision to separate, there's two components, right? There's an emotional component and there's a business component. Don't try not to mix the emotion in with the business component, right? Try and keep a level head about the business side and treat the emotions separate, because it's once you mix those two that you end up by making a nightmare for not only yourself, but everybody else that's working with you. Because
kids,
none of us...
Kids involved too.
Yeah, kids, lawyers. I'm going to say some lawyers, because I know for sure I can't say all lawyers, don't want to be charging what they have to on some of these files. But sometimes people get so positional because of their emotions that it interferes with their business sense, right?
Well, and, clouds logic, right? And
it does.
You look for a pound of flesh, and you can't. You gotta, because the longer you drag that out, the more it costs, and you gotta move on with life, really, if you've made that agreement to do it, right? So
yeah, and from a lawyer's perspective, you're always, I mean, from my perspective, always making sure that you're justifying what you've. Everybody should what you've done, right? Give justification for what you've done. Well, at the end of the day, we buy a house for you. You know what I mean? Or we buy a business, incorporation, whatever. This is what you do for you. But in a separation, sometimes you can have a nice simple separation or a long separation. At the end of the day, you still separated the parties, right? Sometimes they'll have a price tag of $5,000 or $10,000. And sometimes it'll have a price tag in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? And that's a lot dependent on the parties themselves.
Yeah.
Speaking of this, Curry, weren't you talking about a particular news article that you said you wanted to bring up on an episode because of interprovincial, right? Being married in one province, moving to Ontario, the laws are different. So prenuptial agreements.
Yeah. So there was an article I think it was the Globe and Mail or it was on CBC. I can't really remember, but here's the synopsis of the actual article. And so this couple met in university. They're both in business school in Quebec.
Okay.
And this family he would have been the third or fourth generation. He would have been inheriting a massive family fortune.
Like business tied, Curry, or is it just like, is there business or is it insurance or?
No, there's business involved.
Okay.
So it's a family business. And so what ended up happening was the family, prior to getting married, they wanted a prenup to be done. So they bought the, they did the prenup, and she signed. That wasn't an issue. And so anyways, 30 years later, they decide to, they're getting separated. But the one difference is 10 years prior, they decided to move to the province of Ontario. And what ended up happening was, as we know, property is provincial, marriage is federal. They're two mutually exclusive things. And so she took him to court, and the judge agreed that even though the prenup, if it was signed in the province of Ontario, would have been valid and would have been upheld, because a will, or because the prenup, and insert will, insert power of attorney, insert anything you want in this particular situation, was not done also in the province of Ontario, the Quebec will was not valid in the province of Ontario, or the Quebec prenup was not valid in the province of Ontario. And so she's entitled to all the growth of the company from the time that they moved to the province of Ontario to the time that they got divorced, which if you look at the last 10 to 15 years, that would have been the bulk of the growth of the corporation in that time period, based on returns and when they factored it all in. So she's entitled to half. And I keep telling this to our friends, right, Bondo? And I keep telling this to my clients, and no one wants to effing listen. Just because you have a will in a power of attorney in the province of Ontario, or name a province, yeah, name a state to the people who live in the U.S., I don't care. And you have assets or of any kind, cottage, a car, it could be a family farm, it does not matter. If it's in another state or province, you need a will and power of attorney for property specifically, and also a prenup, if applicable, in each province that you have property. Otherwise, you are subject to the rules of that particular province or state. So hypothetically, Bondo, because we don't know anybody, yep, we don't know anybody that has this situation.
No.
Let's say they have a winter property in, oh, I don't know, New York State, so that they could go skiing, or maybe somewhere down south or down east, yep, in Quebec or BC.
Yep.
It does not matter. You need to have a prenup or a will or a power of attorney for property in those particular provinces for anything to be valid. Otherwise, the state or the province has every reason to tell you not valid here.
Yeah. Let me speak to it in terms of what I know. I know contract law. I don't know family law. I'm too far away from the states to give a qualified opinion. I am very familiar with it, but I'm a few years outside of my education on it, so I wouldn't want to comment on it so as just to give maybe dated advice. But essentially, your contract will almost always have a provision that'll state where it's governed. Your prenup is a contract. That's a contract between the parties. And it'll have a provision in there that says it's governed by the laws of the province of Ontario, Canada.
Can you do a blanket one that's all of Canada, or is it you have to do an individual one for each province?
You may be able to do one that says it's federally regulated. I've not been a party to one of those contracts, but it would make sense that you can, within one document, potentially.
You can federally incorporate.
Yes. Yeah, you could in federally incorporate. Family law is, just as a correction, my understanding is it's more provincially driven, and that's what creates the separation, right? Mm-hmm. Because if the prenuptial agreement is under Quebec law, and Quebec is a little bit unique because it's Quebec similar. Has its own set of laws. No other province, like, it has a separate criminal code.
Yes.
Right? Like, or civil code like that nobody else in Canada. All the other provinces, for the most part, are fairly close, but Quebec is a unique anomaly. So very, very particularly if you own things in Quebec, very, very, very make certain that you do have an understanding of the way things operate in Quebec, and there should be some form of extra provincial if it's not Quebec, and even possibly a new agreement when you're outside of Quebec, and even, as Brandon said, in other the provinces. Now, when you go stateside, you're opening up a whole other can of worms, right? Because you're not only now talking about contractual law, you're also talking about taxation, right? Like, and you got to direct your mind to a whole variety of things once you've gone to a completely different country. So yes, absolutely. The long and short of it is, in most instances, you've got to have a document that speaks in that province's language or that state's languages or laws in order for it to be binding. But you can sometimes put language in that will, you know, at least in Ontario, that'll give it extra provincial recognition, might be possible. So.
So I found the article. If I'm going to share it right now. Okay.
Again, keep in mind, Quebec is very unique in Canada yes. because it's carved out its own. Like, just think of politically speaking, try anywhere else in Canada to vote for the Bloc.
No,
can't. Right?
Well, so yes, but that's a little bit different, and the reason why it's a little bit different is because they just chose not to register the Bloc federally or not to in each province because
correct, but that's what they've done. They've created their own civil code, right? So the way that they govern their laws govern in their province different than the rest of Canada. They have particular legislation. Generally speaking, when you read a contract in Ontario and you read a contract in British Columbia, they're going to be fairly close. And I'm not saying that Quebec's not, but it have definite likelihood that it has a higher chance of being different.
So the reason why...
That sounded like a freaking lawyer sentence right there.
Well, but the reason why they got married when they did was because she was on a student visa. She got offered a job. She wanted to stay. She was an immigrant, right?
Mm-hmm.
From where, I don't know. It doesn't state. But so the parents, rightfully so, to protect this.
Yep.
These assets.
Yep.
Yeah, the husband's family insisted that the husband enter into a contract with his wife that would protect the husband's family business. Despite the wife's discontent with her in-laws' interference, the couple signed a contract called Modification of Matrimonial Property Regime. The contract provided the couple was to be separate as to property. Owing to subsequent changes to the legislation in Quebec governing matrimonial property, the couple signed a further contract 2 years later, confirming the changes would not apply to them. They remained separate as to property. And then in 93, they relocated. So we're talking 30 years ago. They relocated from Quebec to Ontario. They were where they lived until their separation in 2015. At that time, the husband's net worth was in the multi-millions, including shares in private corporations, many of which were real estate companies with interests.
Hold on a second there, Brent. I wonder if it's because he owned shares as opposed to real property.
No, shares still are considered property. It doesn't
put it in the mix, right?
It's just taxation's different, obviously.
Yeah.
But no, that would still be considered property.
That's nasty. You know. That's nasty.
Yeah, so she's now entitled to $8 million. Yeah.
I mean, who knows what else went on in the 30, 40 years. But, I mean, if it's a family business and it's a multi-generation, that's, just think of all of us, right? Just think 3 years down the road or three generations down the road from what we've created. And then somebody not of our blood kind of strips half of it away.
So here it is right here. After a two-day hearing in August of 2022, Justice Doyle released her decision in December. Since the couple resided in Ontario at the time of their separation, Justice Doyle applied the laws of Ontario and quickly found that the Quebec contracts met the formal requirements of a domestic contract under the Ontario's Family Law Act. The Quebec contracts were in writing, signed by the parties, and witnessed and dealt with aspects of property division. But Justice Doyle took a deeper look at the contracts and found that while they might they met formal requirements, they did not contain direct and cognate language that would act as a bar to the wife's claim under the laws of Ontario for equalization of property. So they didn't put verbiage in there that would protect moving amongst the country.
The wife's husband
pay her legal fees, but yeah.
Because, I mean, part of it's legislated and then part of it's common law. Right, like here in Ontario, right? So we look at precedent and we say, like, how has this been treated in the past, right? Kind of deal. And so maybe Quebec operates a little bit differently there, but that's great.
Well, the way I read it, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but the way that I read that article was that it was done right, it was done properly, and if that contract was done the same way in Ontario, it would be upheld. But there was no language in there that prevented Ontario property law from dividing the assets. So it does not matter.
Yeah. Brutal.
So I think this is just another example of, if, you know, regardless, just it's going to happen and it'll continue to happen. So you just got to really watch yourself and really
get the advice and get the paperwork in place. Right. Period.
Yeah. Well,
bless you.
Trevor and I had this long rant yesterday. People still think that they know more than the lawyers, know more than the financial planners, and still think that they can do it themselves. But in this particular case, this is where a lawyer did it to the best of their knowledge. Like, no one told the lawyer, oh, we're thinking of moving to Ontario.
Nope.
And probably didn't even tell the lawyer that, you know, what the lawyers do is transactional. What is
And your license in the province.
That's right.
I can't tell you what goes on in Quebec. Correct. That's all I can say is, if you own property in Quebec, you own property in the States, you own property somewhere outside of Ontario, double check to see what their rules are on dealing with that property.
Yeah, but right? you and John are going to go and advise, do your homework.
100%.
We've had many a conversations where most lawyers don't.
Yeah. Most financial planners don't. You know, most investment bankers don't. They don't care, and they don't really care.
The faster, the better. A lot of times people, right?
Right?
Yep.
So, you know, don't assume just because that you got one. And also another thing too, I had a client come to me, trying to keep it as general as possible. The generic of it is, there was family money on one side, not on the other side. They got together, but everything is still in the one side's name, the one parent's name. And so there was a prenup done. Okay, cool. I can support that. I understand that from a financial planning perspective. There's nothing wrong with that. She signed it willfully and not under any duress, so everything's fine there. However, they don't own a matrimonial home. And so when I started to do some digging, there is a loophole in the prenup, and that is basically, you can't unknowingly waive your right to something. So the house they're living in right now is a rental property that they pay rent for because of the current market conditions at the time, right? Like the market conditions were not suitable for them to get a mortgage at the time.
Hold on one sec, Brent. Yeah. You can't unknowingly contract out something less than what the law says you're entitled to.
So let's just use this. So every spouse is entitled to 50% of the matrimonial home. I can't get together with my wife. make her sign a document that states all property's mine, regardless of X, Y, and Z. And then that house ends up becoming the one of the houses ends up becoming the matrimonial home. It doesn't matter if I have that as part of my rental properties or not. My wife can't unknowingly waive her right to the 50% of the matrimonial home. Can't happen.
Not unknowingly, no.
No. You have to basically state, okay, John is bringing in the matrimonial home here from the time of here to here, or up until this time, he's locking in his adjusted cost base. But from the time of marriage onwards, you can say that, like the marriage onwards, like, okay, that's maybe 50-50. You can work out that, but you can't just blanketly sign away your right to something. Right.
And I mean, that person would have to, I don't know tons about family law, so I'm not being overly vocal on it intentionally, but at the end of the day, that other person would have to get or should seek independent legal advice as well, or at least waive, you know what I mean? Cause you don't ever want to sign a contract, and it should never, ever be anybody's advice to sign any kind of agreement that if you do not understand the content of that agreement. So either read it yourself and understand it, or have somebody interpret it and read it and interpret it for you, right? Listen, stop, people. It's foolish, right? Read it or have somebody read it for you.
Speaking of foolish, I want to switch gears here a little bit because something's happening real time right now for me. I want to get your guys' opinion. Real-time
breaking news.
Real-time breaking news. I've got a new listing I put up recently. It's in Port Colborne.
Is this your way of saying you need Bond's legal advice right now?
No. Oh, okay. I'm talking from a strategic standpoint, from the real estate agent. I'm trying to give some insight on it. So I've got, get your guys' opinion here. 1.56 acres, has horse stables, 1,400 square foot bungalow with crawl space. So it's that house. Have you ever been in a crawl space house? It's kind of walkie floors and all that stuff, right?
Crawl space. So what's your crawl space? 4 feet, 5 feet?
I don't know. I've never stuck my head under that. But it's bad enough that you pretty much have to redo the floors basically on it, or shim it up, whatever you got to do, right? So it's a great piece of land that some people might want to tear down, right, and rebuild. It's got a septic on it. It's on propane. But some people might try to rejuvenate it, right, and kind of make, because if you look at a first-time buying, you're not finding anything detached at $400,000 really, let alone 1.6 acres, right?
$400,000, you said?
$400,000. But it's not even really livable right now in the shape it's in.
Yeah, but you said it's on 1.6 acres of land.
Exactly. But you can find 2 acres of land in the 325 to 375 price range in similar areas, right? So
okay.
Then you've got a house that you've got to tear down in order to get the similar lot. So really its best sale price would not be given by tearing it down and rebuilding. It would be by rejuvenate it, because if you look at a first-time buyer out there, what do you find at $400,000 that has? So when people phone up and say, well, there's no pictures on this, and I specifically do this, it's strategic because, first off, the seller doesn't want to show the pictures because they look that bad. But secondly, I want to get people through and all that, right? So lo and behold, clearly a lot of interest in the property, right? Everybody wants to see the inside.
100%.
I've got personal pictures that I can text people the pictures to say, look, here where you're at. You know, it's a great opportunity. Like anybody who's a first-time buyer is going to say, wow, I can get 1.6 acres, stables, blah, 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 right? So right now we've been on the market for about 3 days, 15 showings. We're at 4 offers. Okay, so 4 offers right now. Now,
are you holding?
No, I'm not holding, but what I'm doing, because it's an estate sale, they have to talk to siblings and all that and figure out what they're doing.
Yeah.
But it's also strategic that as soon as one offer comes in, it's got to be 48 hours irrevocable.
Gotcha.
But what that also does is it gives me the time to make sure the first offer coming in isn't necessarily the best offer, right?
Which usually it is, right, Jeff?
No, not at all. Not even close.
No way.
No. Usually the first offer is not the best offer by any means. The problem in the market, and you got to look at it from
I meant like first buyer.
First, not at all. First buyer wants to rush the market, wants to beat the market to it, might get full price or very close, right? You got to look at it from a real estate agent's point of view, right? You got a busy agent, and someone says, well, house just listed. I want to see it right away. My docket for the day might not be available to take you to that house.
Oh, 100%.
Right.
So 100%. Usually you need about a week on the market So every agent has an opportunity to visualize that property and potentially see it in person, right? So anyways, my frustration comes in here is if you have no offers on it and you're in the first 2 weeks, the way I list the houses, you better give me full or damn close to it, right? Otherwise, we're going to wait it out to see if everyone else has it, right? So yep. I've got offers coming in. Now, the problem is when you're in a busy market, when I said it was booming earlier, it means people are pulling triggers. They're putting offers on paper. So if you've got four offers on a house listed at $399, which is a very sellable house, what would you think is a reasonable price point? But if I was representing you guys as buyers, what would you think is reasonable?
This is 1.7, 1.6 acres?
1.56 acres. Septic, stables, has a house, but you need to put in $50,000 minimum.
I'd say at least 1.2 based on that size of land and that you have a bungalow, right? Like just
No. If you were trying to acquire this property, what would you think is a reasonable offer to acquire it at a listing point of $399? Four offers in play.
I'm at probably minimum 5.25.
Okay, well, let's make sure my clients are listening to this.
Okay.
The context of you haven't seen it at all either, right? Like I should send pictures to you and all that. Anyways, my frustration comes in, four offers on it. Someone just sent in an offer to me right now while we're on there, and they give me an offer of $250,000. Okay, so the frustration, you put in whatever offer you want.
Well, hold on a second. How bad is this fucking house, Jeff?
Yeah,
like these people.
It's close to a teardown, but you could rejuvenate it to be something. You got to put in $50,000 to make it livable.
Okay,
that's with $50,000.
That's with.
But if you're talking putting in $50,000 and you've got it listed, you got 1.6 acres in my head.
I've got two questions. Yep. Go ahead, though. Go ahead, Bondo.
In my head, the land. If you can rejuvenate a 1,400 square foot property with $50,000 and you're on where's the location?
Port Colborne.
Port Colborne, rural Port Colborne.
Okay. Well, you're going to lose money there too, right?
No. See, when I'm doing a CMA on it, the two considerations
I think you're low at 400, Jeff.
But the problem here is you're looking at it from a land standpoint, right? So then you have to count what kind of land can you get out there that's 2 acres with nothing to tear down.
Yeah.
Nothing to tear down, 2 acres.
Yeah, you got to pay for the tear down.
325, 370. Well, tear down, decommission of a septic. There's quite a bit you have to do, right? So this happened down the street from mine right now where an agent put up one that was 460 on a huge lot.
So
he's like, it's a great place to tear down. I'm like, we got to pay to tear down. It's not a free tear down, right?
After that assessment, anything less than 350, in my opinion, would be ignorant.
Okay, exactly. So and you guys haven't been through it and kind of done your own reconnaissance on it, right? But if you put an offer at 250 in the first 4 days of a listing, is there any chance in hell that gets accepted?
No.
So what's that do to the offer to the other three agents who are on there? It pushes their price. Well, I'm doing my job. I'm pushing my price as much as I can, right?
Yep, of course.
But what's the benefit for this buyer to throw in 250 on it? It pushes the other price and all that. It escalates the market. It puts, like panic kind of in the market a little bit.
How does it do that?
Because if you have, say you have offers, and I don't know where it's going to tap, because I haven't got all the offers in play right now.
Yeah.
But one offer, you're very close to the list price in the first week, right? That's how you get it done. Two offers, maybe you're $5,000, maybe $10,000 over list. You get the three and four offers, you're getting to the point where you're 25, 50. You're going to get one agent who pushes hard to get it, right? So I'm doing my job. I'm doing it exactly by the book, how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
But that 250 right there, because nobody knows what the other offers are, right?
Yeah.
So fourth offer in there, because it comes after the first three offers are
registered. Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So it's one offer registered, two offers registered, three offers.
So it's not pushing the ball. Are
saying, well, they're pushing the price. They're escalating the price.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're putting in an offer that has no chance of getting accepted any way, shape, or form.
Because
if I'm a listing person, and I list something at 400,000,
are you doing that?
And
just
I'm the agent, and I say, yeah, we'll take 250 for sure. I did my job. Give me a payday. I did the best I could to get as much as I could. Is there any way, shape, or form in hell that would ever get listed? If I was listing one of your guys' property, we came and come at a price that was worth 400,000, and I said, well, first off, we came in at 250. We got to take it. Am I doing my job? Am I making any money for my client? Am I pushing the envelope at all?
No.
So what's the purpose of putting this $250,000 offer in here?
Wasting time.
What does this do What does it do is it pushes price on it, right?
Yep.
Because I could get 10 offers of 350 on a house that's worth 400, but one guy's going to go high.
Yep.
Right? One guy's going to go high.
Yep.
Now, I did my research on this property where I put the price point is where I think it should sell. This is me doing my research on it. This is not me lowballing. This is not me trying to push price.
Cause a bid.
To me, this is there's two ways this house gets bought.
Which we know that's not your
either style. It's torn down and, you know, a beautiful piece of land you build on it, which I think is the expensive route. Because if you're at 400,000, I can find a better lot that doesn't need anything to be torn down at 350. I'm going to take that lot if I had to choose between two lots, right?
Yep.
Or if I get something that's 2 acres as opposed to 1.56 acres for 399, I'll probably take that lot, right?
Yep.
So then you look at it. Okay, if this is a first-time buyer house and they're going to rejuvenate this house to live in it, I hate crawl space houses, right? Because all the floors are wonky, you got to reshim it up and all that. You might have issues underneath, blah, blah, blah. You got to put in 25 to 50 grand to make it livable. So new kitchen, new bathroom, new floors, drywall repairs, trim, electrical repairs, plumbing repairs, any house should do, right? There's always going to be electrical and plumbing and everything like that. So my synopsis was, or my conclusion came to was that the best chance for me to get it would be a first-time buyer, someone who says, wow, I can have 1.6 acres in here, and I'm going to have to live in a not nice place for a while until I get there. But as long as I tough it out, it's almost like living in an RV for a while or a tent in the damn place. If I tough it out, slowly fix it up myself and all that, 5 years from now, it's going to be quite the investment. I still think it's best to add a foundation, right? So the best course of action, I think, would be to find a buyer who's going to try to live in it as is and fix it up, right?
Yep.
Because tearing it down, you're just going to take the lot. You don't need to tear anything down.
Yep.
That makes more sense, right? So then the person buying at 250 probably says, well, I'm going to tear it down. I'm going to build a nice house there, but it's not worth it at 399. So 250 makes sense to me because I have to decommission the septic system. I'll have to tear down the house. I'll have to bulldoze it. I'll have to fill in the pond back there, regrade it, blah, blah, blah. All this cost. Well, I need to do 150 grand worth of work, so I should take it off the house price, right? But what it does is you have a no chance in hell offer that comes in. No chance. But all the other people see four offers now, not three offers, or could be a fifth offer now. And everybody knows there's four offers in it. So other people are looking at it. Do you think all four offers are coming at 250 or lower?
No.
You know?
No.
So what's the point of it?
Like, it's a dick offer. It's a dick offer,
no,
right?
No, it makes me look at this agent. Like you're an idiot. You're wasting your time, or you're getting bullied by your buyer. And the buyer's saying, "I don't care. Put it in. I think that's all it's worth."
So here's a couple of things I would say. So yes, you priced it based on the 400, right? So I put the 50 grand in.
Mm-hmm.
What's the house worth?
500, maybe. You're not making huge off of it.
But I'm looking
at you put a foundation in and you put 50 grand into that. That's got to be a six plus house, man. On it.
But the problem is you're not just keeping the same layout there. None of you guys have seen this, right? So you're not keeping the same layout.
Yeah.
You got to keep in mind if you're trying to make, you could probably make it a great house. Like if you
are you realistic on the 50 though, Jeff, I guess. Like is 50 you but just putting lipstick on the pig or?
This is all I do. Is stroke checks and invoices.
No, I know.
Renovations and builds. So I am as bang on about renovations as you can get out there.
And yes, but you also know that there's lipstick renovations and then there's solid renovations, right?
Well, solid renovation would be putting in a proper foundation, having a basement.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
kitchen,
the solid.
Bathroom work, right?
So if you're doing the lipstick on the pig renovation, which is appealing to some people because they could have that house. Really, the proper retool of the house is to lift the house or tear it down or do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Put a full basement in there.
People don't have that choice to do it. People looking to buy a $400,000 house
don't think
they have 1.5 acres in the realm of possibility. Right? So if they do buy the house, put in 50 grand, you're always going to have potential mold issues in the basement or wonky floors that you're going to have to consistently replace. All that's going to be a natural life occurrence until one day you make enough equity on the house that you could lift the house, put in a foundation, and you might get there.
Yeah.
Right? But if you put 50 grand in, you're still going to have wonky floors. Crawl space is the worst house to ever build.
Okay.
Right?
But
it just started like that. Right?
Yep.
I can't stand them. I stay away from them. I just think they're problems. They got mold issues. They got all kinds of ventilation issues, all kinds of stuff that can happen. Right?
Yep.
But so like this is the thing though, that offer that comes in at 250, they're now 300. So they're trying to make mad bank and make $200,000 of cash.
Well, no, because they got to drop the house, right? So they have expenses into it to bring it into a point where they then want to take, essentially, if I'm understanding you, Jeff, it's vacant land. It's probably worth $350,000.
Yeah, probably about that.
Right?
Clear. Yep.
In order for these people to make it vacant, it's going to cost them probably $75,000.
I don't know if it's that much. Like, I've got a guy, just so you guys all know, a wicked guy. He'll tear down a house in a day, remove it all, keeps everything in it, so you have no choice on it.
Yeah.
He's $10,000 to $20,000 for any house you can find.
That's fantastic.
Okay. But what he does is just gets a bunch of bins, bulldoze it, throws it in there, it's gone.
Yep.
Right. One day. He says it's his favorite job to do because it's all labor. He owns the trucks.
Yep.
Right. So
it's good price point for him. Right.
He loves it. He says it's his favorite thing to do. Right. But on top of that, you have to decommission the septic unless you're using it. But the current septic is so close to the small footprint of a house that if you're going to go through that, you're going to remove the septic, relocate it, decommission it. And that's a major cost right there, right? Probably $20,000 for that. So you're $30,000 to $40,000 to get this back to a detached lot that's vacant, right? And then you have stables on it, right? So you probably are about 350, and the stables aren't the craziest thing to build. It's just, hey, there's cobwebs everywhere and all that, mice and stuff like that, right? So it's usable. So, my conclusion was the best money I can get for is if someone wants to use it as their first time home because they can't find that at all.
100%.
They'll do it because if somebody's building the house, it's too much for the lot.
100%.
Right? So that's the
100%.
So unless the location of the lot is good.
But I'm doing my research and I'm looking at lots around there for less than that.
So you know the price point on the lot.
I'm not gas pointing it, right? Like, I'm doing research on this stuff.
Yeah, right? But maybe somebody wants that pond in the back, right? Like, maybe
you dig a pond. Doesn't cost you that much.
I get it, but the location of it, right? People look.
But at that's your lottery buyer, Trev, right? You can't do your basis on the lottery buyer, right? True. Like the Asian family that comes along and sees the number 8. I had heard a story, right? Like it's got.
They stay away from fours and they like eights,
right? I heard stories that knock on the door. You know what I mean? It's an Asian person, and you're offered $300,000 or $400,000 $100,000 more because you've got triple eights or something like that, right? Like
what I'm getting at is, if you have no chance at all, why throw in your ring in the hat just to push price for everyone else?
It just probably is just, why not? What do you have to lose?
And if, well, because Collins, you've done it before with other agents, knowing you don't have a chance in getting it, but you're helping them out get another offer.
What did Lloyd Christmas say? What did Lloyd Christmas say?
But when I do that, Trevor, I'm putting in a reasonable offer that I think might have a chance that's probably at list price.
I'm not.
I'll throw an offer here. I don't think I'm going to get it, but I think my value on this is this much. There's not a hope in hell that you ever get that at 250. So why bother doing that?
What did Dumb and Dumber say? Lots one in a million? So you're saying there's a chance.
That's right.
Right?
There's not.
And there's people out there, dude, that are like Dumb and Dumber, right? Well,
and you know what? I have no problem trying to get a better price. And I've done it. I've done it recently where I've got it, around 100% of this price. I'm trying to get another one at $40,000, but it's not in the first week of the listing.
Jeff, online. What did I want
to do? First week of the listing.
I wanted to push back online another $10,000, right? Mm-hmm. What did you say?
Not going
to
happen.
Not going to happen, right? That's not the play. Okay.
Well, and the play is if you're lowballing an agent too.
Yep. They're going to get insulted too, right?
You verbally call them and say, look, this is what I'm thinking. I don't know if it's a waste of my time or your time. Here's what I'm going to give you.
Yeah.
Think about it. I'll be here for the next month. If you guys say, you know what, this is something I'll entertain, give me a call. I'll stick it on paper. Not, hey, I'm going to take $150,000 off in 4 days of a listing on and don't even look at $150,000 because it doesn't seem like that much. But when your list price is 400, and you take $150,000 off,
that's 40%, isn't it?
That's the percentage you're asking. You know what houses sell for right now in Niagara? 30%. Between like 95 and 97% of list price about.
Sure.
So if you get 10% off on a house, you got to look at, wow, you're an amazing agent if you could get 10% off on that listing. Because why wouldn't you drop price? So if I had a house listed at 400,000, before I accept 250, wouldn't I drop my price to 375 first? Try that kind of, you know, marketing when that's my listing price. Then if that doesn't work, guess what I'll do now? I'll go to 350.
Yeah.
Try it out there.
Yes.
And what's after that? Guess what's after that? Do you think I jump down to 250?
No.
No. Probably 325.
Yeah. Right?
Then 300.
Smaller increments.
Then 275. How do I go to you, Curry, if you said list this $400,000 house? You said, Jeff, I want $400,000. Okay, we both agree on this price. Oh, first off, it came $250. I think you should take it, Curry. Let's go.
It's going to happen.
And then you're going to pay me commission on top of that.
Yeah, no.
I did my job.
So we got to wrap up.
We got to wrap up.
One quick question on that, though. Is it an out-of-town agent or a local agent?
Local.
Wow. Okay. So they've got access to all the local data to know that 95 to 97% of list price.
Hey. They've got, and they can.
Not all the agents in the region are good, though, right?
No, like, they're not.
I get it.
Well, there's a lot of people just tell me what to do, and I'll do it, and I'll put it on paper.
There's
you can't necessarily be that.
Guys,
Curry's got to go.
We got to wrap it up.
He's getting pissy. We got to go.
Well, no, like
he's getting pissy. Look, you can see in his eyes.
Yes. The Leafs won, Curry. The Leafs won. Yes, we do have another engagement, though.
Curry's gonna get mad. Hey. Let's go,
Bondo.
Okay, next time we're on, I would like to talk about ChatGPT bot.
Hold on. Next time we're on, we actually have Deanna Lipp. She's the account manager for here in Niagara with Home Equity Bank. We're going to be talking all things reverse mortgages.
Ooh, so, I like that.
Interesting.
Be good.
Interesting. Yes, tune in to that. And we want to talk about ChatGPT bot. I think this thing is going to...
Smoke is coming out of Curry's ears right now, Bond. You better say something.
Let's help you stay informed. Out.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Produced by Crier Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.